just to pick up on the last part of that tape, then they just the name was just chosen. There was no special affiliation in Father Highland Town.
See, Father Highland was quite a baseball fan. You know, his brother was Dr. Highland for the St. Louis Cardinals.
What do you mean? He was like the medical doctor for the team, St. Louis Cardinals.
You know, we went out for basketball, you know, and there was none of us very big, very tall, you know. And Father Moss and Father Highland was pretty good friends at that time. And,
well, who is Father Moss?
Father Moss was a priest at St. Andrews. And St. Andrews at that time was a powerhouse on everything. So Father Highland was kind of proud of us guys. We was pretty good. We was fast. And we used to work out at the YMCA for nothing, see. We used to bus over there and work out. So Father Moss, when he saw us, he laughed. He says, "You mean to tell me that team is going to beat my team?" Father Highland says, "Well, what do you want to bet?" He said, "I'll tell you what we'll do." He says, "We'll bet baseball uniforms and a baseball outfit for the team that wins." And by God, we won them.
Yes,
we beat him. And Father Moss couldn't believe it. And a matter of fact, we beat him in baseball that year. Because that's kids, that's all we did. All summer long, you know, from night, daylight till dark, play baseball. And we had all the fields we wanted there on the shipyard.
Well, moving into like the 20s, was there a lot of, you know, so-called speakeasies in Saginaw during the 20s?
Lots of. Matter of fact, on our street we had three great big stills.
That's what you told me about that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you always hear the connotations about, you know, the Italians being involved in the mafia. Was there, you know, much of an influence in that around, you know, Saginaw?
Not too much in Saginaw. There was like these three stills that was on our streets.
This was on Eddy Street.
Yeah. These guys come over there, these guys into a wreck on the barn, see.
Now, were these like Italians from someplace else?
Out of town, yeah.
Okay.
And they didn't know what they figured, well, a few bucks, you know, let them rent the barn. And they didn't know what they was going to do. First thing you know, they moved all this stuff from there, and these guys are scared to say anything. See, matter of fact, they got raided and they still wouldn't talk. They were scared.
In other words, they didn't divulge any information as to
no,
who rented
it. They served their time, I think.
Was there prison sentences involved?
Three of them,
is that right? Federal? Federal offense?
Yeah, they went to 11 grudge for 1 year, I guess, or something like that.
These were, what, three?
They wanted to rent my dad's barn. My dad says, "No, the barn belongs to me. I'm going to use it."
Well, how come they didn't, you know, okay, if they were Italians from out of town and, you know, they influenced these other Italian people to put a still in their barn, even though they didn't know it, how come your dad didn't get involved in this at all?
Well,
you know, how come they didn't put any pressure on him?
They put pressure on him, but he just told them that he needed the barn himself and he wasn't going to land away. He didn't want nobody coming in and out of his yard.
Well, did he know these people?
Yeah.
You know, what?
Yeah, he knew other folks in the old country, you know, and he figured, well, he ain't gonna have nobody
telling him what to do.
See, we didn't have no money, but he still figured, I don't need that much money, that kind of money, so he didn't want to have nothing to do with it.
Well, did he tell these guys that, you know, that he was going to write anybody or anything like that, you know? You know,
well, they had respect for him because my dad knew a lot of
their family in the old country.
See, and they had been talking about it different times, you know, and stuff like that. And they had respect for him. They didn't say nothing. He said,
"Yeah,
well, it's up to you. If you want to, you could use your property." You know, he said, "No." So there was no more said about it.
Well, you know. Were there were quite a few speakeasies then throughout the city then, right? That you could go in and buy
Saginaw.
Is that right?
Yeah. Everybody made home brew.
Yeah.
homemade wine and stuff like that.
What do you remember about Saginaw as far as the 20s was concerned? You know, that had it changed quite a bit from when you were a boy?
Oh, yeah. There was everybody starting to get automobiles. And first there used to be a traffic cop on the corners, you know, and then first thing you know, you see the lights popping up.
Is that right?
Stuff like that, yeah. And I remember when the cars used to go down the street and the horse would just fly in the air and scare the devil out of the horses, you know. And some of those horses, they used to buy them, you know, they never seen a car or anything noisy.
Well, okay, by then you were, you know, a young man. Where did you start working?
Oh, I worked in LaShawn Eddie Parker.
At the lumber?
Yeah.
Well, was that kind of like on its way out by then, you know, as far as, you know, because the lumber industry had been, you know,
well,
its heyday was well over by that time, I forget.
It was going pretty good, Pete, till, you see, I was 15 years old. I was 16 years old when I quit there. And by that time, I was making $4.25 a day. That's 42 and a half cents an hour from 15. And that was more than some of those guys that was worked there for 20 years. It was just different machines, you know, that I was able to operate, that they couldn't put out the stuff fast enough.
Yeah.
And any time they had a carload or two carloads of that particular boxes that they were making.
Well, did you work like on a piecemeal system then, you know?
Well, an hour.
Okay, an hour.
See, and when he put the steam on me to put more production on us, I bought some more money. And either give me more money or I'd quit. And then they give me the money and I'd produce. So then I moved to Detroit, you know. And we worked on road construction. We help.
Go ahead.
I happened to be, the boss took a liking to me and he put me on the surveying gang, you know. Of course, I didn't know nothing about surveying or anything like that, but I knew how to swing a sledgehammer, and we was driving the stakes here and there, and the guy would tell me when to tap it and stuff like that. See, we helped move the Grand Trunk Railroad over so Woodward Avenue could be a two-lane highway.
This was in Detroit.
Yeah. That's between Pontiac and Detroit. I worked 3 years on that.
Well, you were there quite a while, and
yeah,
you pretty much set up residence
there
for a while. Well, you know, did Saginaw change, like, when you came back, or were you coming back and forth?
I was coming back and forth. Yeah. Like in the wintertime when we couldn't work in Detroit,
yeah,
I used to come back here, see. And then the road from here to Pontiac, half of it was gravel and half of it was, part of it was macadam, but it was narrow.
You know, there was a murder on Eddy Street. Oh, I don't know exactly when it was. Was it in the 20s, the late 20s?
There was two of them.
Two of them? Were there, you know, like...
Matter of fact, there was three guys. Two guys died on the first one.
Was it like a family difference or what?
Yeah, some guy ran away with this girl. She was, I think he was around...
No, were these Italian families?
Yeah. They eloped. She was 16 and he was around 24, 25, something like that. See? And this girl's brother and her ex-boyfriend come to Saginaw, and they said they was going to make up and stuff like that, forget everything. But actually, they just come down there to pick an argument. My argument led him to him. This guy was staying with his uncle, see? Well, it was a girl's uncle. And when they start picking an argument over a difference in ages and stuff like that, this one guy pulled a gun and he shot the guy, and the guy ran in the bedroom, and the guy followed him in there, and he
emptied his pistol on him.
Yeah.
Was this like bad blood between the families?
Well, it was just over this girl, see.
Mm-hmm.
this guy that was going with a girl, he talked to her brother, and he said, "You ain't gonna let him get away with that stuff, you know how that goes." Mm-hmm. And the old man, the guy at the house, you know, he told his nephew, he says, "Well, what did you do? You killed him." And he grabbed his, you know, he grabbed his nephew to hold him, and my God, this other guy shot him in the stomach.
And he eventually died.
Yeah, he died. He didn't die right away, but he died.
Well, wasn't there one murder on Eddy Street that was kind of like an assassination type murder?
Oh yeah, that was two doors from us. There was renting this house from Bob and Tom, you know.
And this was what, Tom D or Tom DeMacorea?
Yeah, and they shot him right through the basement window, through the cold air duct, and they got him right back to the ear.
Why did, was there any, you know, theory as to when was killed?
I don't know. We know there was something wrong because the guy wasn't driving his own car. He was always driving a friend's car around, and he wore sunglasses all day. He was sunny sun or not.
Do you remember what his name was?
Yeah.
What was it?
It was Tony Cosenza.
Tony Cosenza?
Cosenza.
Cosenza? Where was he from? Detroit?
Yeah.
He was from Detroit.
Yeah. You know, they was after him because first they poisoned some of his cows, and then they burned his barn, and then that's when he moved to Saginaw, kind of, he knew what was coming, I suppose, and he was hiding out here, see. But they were playing cards in the basement there, and how they knew he was here, I don't know. That's how they got him. And I don't think they ever did catch who done it.
No, I don't imagine.
Yeah.
Well, what was the depression like in Saginaw?
After
the stock market fell.
It was tough. We got married in 1933, and mother and I, the banks closed up. If you had any money, you couldn't get a nickel on it.
Is that right?
Oh.
Well, the banks were still... They were still solvent in Michigan, in Saginaw.
There was only one bank that was solvent in Saginaw, and that was
Second National Bank. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
The rest of them?
And I was hauling sugar for Michigan Sugar Company.
Uh-huh.
And matter of fact, we'd go, I don't care how big a chain outfit it was, go over there, they'd give us instructions. You have the cash on hand before you untie your tarp. And we went to Fort Huron, the Smith brothers, and I pulled into the warehouse, and they let me in. I got in there about 6 o'clock in the morning, and they had a crew there waiting to unload the load of sugar. I had 200 bags down there, and the guy says, "All right, we'll unload you in about 10 minutes. I said, "No, you won't. You got to have the money. That's my orders." And he called up the supervisor, and he was gone till about pretty close to 8 o'clock when he come back. And he had the money, and it was all in $1 bills mostly, and it was only about 6 or 7 $5 bills. And I had a bundle of money. I had to put them in my in my blouse. I couldn't carry them. Before I could let them unload that sugar.
Well, how did, you know...
That's how tough it was, you know.
But you had a job.
Didn't accept no checks or nothing.
Is that right? You had a job throughout
the... Well, I never was out of job.
Well, you were fortunate then.
Yeah.
In that respect. Well, what about the rest of the family? Did you have to, I know you had a brother, and your wife had a number of people in her family that were still young.
Most of them was on PWA.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Public Works?
Yeah.
Well,
I used to go to some of these warehouses, like, say, I was in a central warehouse in Flint that was a produce house, and two groceries they handled, and I took a load of sugar there one morning. It was in the wintertime, February, and it was cold. And I see guys there picking up frozen potatoes and even cabbage leaves that fell off during the day when they was loading up, and maybe a carrot would drop off. These guys would fight to grab them. I'm telling you, it was rough.
I made some noise.
If you had any money, you couldn't get it out of the bank. Eventually, the people got their money back. They got, I think, 90% of it.
But they had to wait for it, for one thing.
They give you a little dribble now and then, and you didn't even know you had it. Because most of the people were so far to get it. Yeah, it was rough.
Would they have ration stamps for certain? No, not then.
No, they had surplus foods. You'd go over and pick it up at the different stations. And
was that like a free handout? Or?
Yeah, they used to get butter, and when I was driving down through Ohio with my truck, you know, they had in different parts of Ohio that I see, they had some of these cattle from the drought in the west, you know, drought. There was no grass growing, and there was just nothing but skin and bones, you know, and they put them in these fields to fatten them up a little bit, and that's what they used to slaughter and feed to the, you know, the guys who was on the PWA. Butter, these guys was living pretty good. They used to get their rent paid, they used to get coal, and they get all this surplus food, and plus they get a few bucks, you know, every 2 weeks they get so much.
Well, was Saginaw hit, you know, pretty hard by, what was the major industries in like the 1930s or?
Well, it was all, they had the foundry here. And
General Motors type foundry, is that right?
Yeah. It was like this all over.
Yeah,
it was
just,
it was rough. But and Roosevelt put in this NRA, you know, and you work 8 hours and that was it.
That was it, you couldn't work?
Yeah, before that it used to be worked to fall over. Like me, I always used to drive. They chased me from one town to another, you know, but it was a living.
Yeah, well, that's the important thing. You were eating, you know.
Yeah. Then after Prohibition was repealed, a year after, in 1934, I started selling beer.
In 34?
I started driving beer.
Did people, you know, like in the Saginaw, you were basically in the Saginaw area with the beer. Did people, you know, did bars really pick up, you know, as far as relieving Prohibition was concerned?
Oh, yeah, they only let out so many licenses, see, Pete, but a lot of these guys.
Well, you could only deliver so much beer at certain spots, couldn't you? Or?
Well, no, see, it was these guys, at first they started giving credit, see. Then, you go back the next week to collect, and the guy says, well, I had to buy some chairs, or I had to buy a bar, or I had to buy some refrigeration. See, a lot of them just had ice, you know, they put in a tub, and like that. So we had a few planks up there. They didn't have very good bars, you know, nothing. They just gradually they got better. See, but at first, Nordhoffer's down there in across the street from the National Brewery, they used to give a big pitcher for 25 cents. 16-ounce
Super
for a dime, and they used to be lined up there for a block long.
Where was that? Where was the National Brewery?
On Genesee and Walnut, and the Nordhoffer's was a block off of Genesee, right on the corner of Walnut and Second, I think it is. But, man, they just jamming there.
Was that a pretty good? You know, was that pretty much a standard price, though? You know, a dime for a 16-ounce?
Oh, yeah, when they first started, 14-ounce, 16-ounce, It was mostly draft beer, Pete. There wasn't so much case beer. There was a lot of case beer, but draft beer was the big thing in the taverns.
Yeah.
And you could get a keg of beer for $5, $6. You're like your popular beers out of Detroit at that time was $6 a keg, $5.50.
You know, I know there were some breweries in the Saginaw area before Prohibition, but what about after Prohibition? Did they ever?
They started, but they didn't have the water.
Is that right?
Yeah, the water is a big problem for beer. See, the Shem's Brewery started.
This was in the city, now city of Saginaw.
Yeah, and they started, but that didn't last very long. The old National Brewery was still in the same family. See, during Prohibition, they made malt.
That's with no alcohol, right?
Well, just the malt itself, see. And they used to make home brew out of it, see. 5 gallon cans. And then when Prohibition was repealed, why, they went right in making beer again, see. But after all, the old man died, why, the brewery seemed to die.
Did he live in Saginaw? Or?
Yeah, they lived right.
Who was it, you know?
Wally Weber.
Wally Weber?
And Wally Weber. And he had a son, Wally Weber. I was a good friend with him. I used to meet him quite often. But after the old man died, right, it seemed to go the other
way. Go downhill.
Yeah.
Well, was there, you know, a big revival on, you know, bars and stuff like that after
that?
Oh,
terrific.
Was there?
Oh, yeah.
You know, because
everybody wanted to get into business, see. But they only let so many licenses mm-hmm. out.
Was it expensive to get a license after Prohibition?
No, not too much. It cost more now than it did then.
Well, yeah, but, you know, how did, you know, like if 300 people applied for, you know, 200 licenses, how did they determine? Was it kind of like a first-come, first-served basis?
No, it was so much for population, okay. And you couldn't have no police record or mm-hmm. nothing like that. It had to, you had to, no felonies or nothing like that.
Well, did you help feed, you know, your wife's family and stuff, or
during
the depression?
Oh, we helped out. Everybody helped each other out. You know, if you wouldn't let nobody go hungry. Mm-hmm. Everybody seemed to be the same way. But when times are tough, it kind of draws people closer
together. Yeah, I know that. That's for sure.
We didn't, say to hang with this guy or to hang with that. It'd be a rough spot and you had a little something like it. I know, I used to, when I first started working for Spag, I used to go.
This is a Spagnola distributor?
Yeah. And he was in the produce business, see. And we'd go down Detroit to get a load of fruit. I used to go there sometimes twice a week, see, get a truckload of fruit. That miscellaneous stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The other stuff you used to get by the carload, see, but miscellaneous like vegetable fruit and stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, what made you get into the beer business, you know?
Well, I was working for Spag, see, and mm-hmm. and
didn't he just
he
change
wanted his somebody to work the downtown territory, see. And then I seemed to catch on pretty good, and he kept me on there, see, and then he gave me the first ward in all the downtown area, downtown north, see.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, he gave me the whole east side. He got out of the food business and
went into the beer business completely.
Yeah.
What type of beer did you sell then?
Oh, we had Miller's High Life at that time, and then there was a Zinda. That was an old brewery out of Detroit. A lot of those breweries are all gone now,
mm-hmm.
see. In Detroit at one time, I think there was 15 or 20 breweries. And you count them all, you
yeah.
know, small and big. But I guess now there's only two of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had Cadillac. That was a small Belgian bunch had owned that. And we had Zinda. Out of Detroit. We had Food City out of Battle Creek, and we had Miller's.
Miller's Highland.
One time we had Burger, too, out of Cincinnati. That was too expensive to haul up here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't make too much money on that.
So by then, were you dealing in bottled beer?
Yeah, bottled beer kept coming up all the time, see. But when the first Prohibition was repealed,
it's just about 90%.
One
drafting.
Tavern would run, the Cactus Bar 1 week. I didn't have that stop, but that one driver made the Cactus Bar. He put 124 heads in 1 week.
That's a half barrels of beer, right?
Half barrels of beer mm-hmm. in 1 week. That was Food City.
And did they go through that?
Yeah. Yeah. You see, there wasn't. It wasn't one third of the license there is today. See.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there wasn't that many people either. See, like out in Saginaw Township, out here,
yeah.
out here, there's only one license. And that was there was two of them in Thomas Township, and that was right here, a tavern right here on Hills, Jim Hill, and then there was Herb McCuskey down there, Matt's Tavern at that time.
What was the Bancroft, the big place through those years?
Yeah. Bancroft was the big hotel at that time around here.
Well, that was about the only place you could stay. Well, they still had the Fortney Hotel and the Shook Hotel.
And there was a few of them that were torn down. It used to be the Sherman House, and that was pen and papers in the Sherman House. Wesley House.
You mentioned that when you were a boy, that the Saginaw River used to, overflood its banks. Has that always, been a problem?
Yeah, but see, they put some dams up north and stuff like that, kind of hold back the water. Now they don't have that problem anymore. I seen the high water right up on the corner of Michigan and Genesee.
Is that that?
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah. And us kids used to skate all the way from Weiss Street, clean to Genesee.
This was in the winter, right?
Yeah.
On the ice?
Yeah. See, there was a bridge across Clark Street, there was one across Ash Street, and there was one across Weiss Street, the bridge. It used to be what they call a bale back there. During the lumbering days, then they used to float these logs down through there, see? But that was after, before my time. There was right across from the Merce Hotel, there was a hotel there. I don't know what the hell they used to call that, I forget now. We used to skate under there, it was on stilts.
The hotel was on stilts?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. We used to skate all over that place. Skates were so darn soft every time. You used to carry a file in your pocket. We'd skate down the Saginaw River, We'd go underneath the PM Bridge.
Pierre Marquette?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the engines would go across there, and when they start pouring the coal to where the soot would come out of the smokestack, and we go past that, then we'd have to stop and sharpen our skates and down our skates. All that ashes and stuff would be on the ice.
Well, Mr. Democrat, I'd like to thank you for spending this hour with me. I certainly appreciate it. Okay.